at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
17 minutes past 9 this morning here on OTB AM. You're very welcome. If you'd like to get involved, we'd love to hear from you. 087 9180 180 is the WhatsApp number. And of course, the YouTube channel is open. You can leave a comment there as well. This Friday is World Egg Day. To celebrate, Derval O'Rourke has teamed up with Bord Bia for their Crack On campaign to promote quality mark eggs as a natural fuel for a busy, healthy lifestyle. You can find more inspiration for egg recipes at boardbia.ie/eggs/crack-on. Derval O'Rourke, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We're pretty good. We had a bit of a debate early in the show and we power ranked our eggs. Owen, you need to do the needful here. You're the one that has the...
Well, there's a correct order on eggs, Derval, which I'm sure you'll agree with. Number four is boiled. Number three is poached. Number two is fried. And number one is scrambled. I'm sure you'll have no disagreements with that list.
Oh, okay. No. This is going to be problematic.
Right.
I think I would go... It's controversial, but I like just a simple boiled egg.
Okay, this is a problem.
And shocking. What? Number one?
Yeah, like I would put boiled number one.
What?
And then if I'm going to be fancy, because recently I've started to lean into poached more, because I feel if you make someone a boiled egg, they're a bit like, really? But if you make someone a poached egg, they're like, oh my God, thanks for the poached egg. So just to get credit, I've leaned in more to poached eggs recently and I'm nailing them. So I'm going boiled, poached, fried, scrambled last.
So you're literally the opposite. I mean, we've had some controversial takes on this show, Derval, but I think that's right up there. And are you using a poacher or are you doing them naturally?
No, I just boil the water, get it to a simmer, literally drop in a couple of bits of vinegar. I actually did this last night on leek fritters, unreal. Bit, and then I drop in my egg and I look at it and I believe and have faith in it. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of my poaching the eggs. I feel like mentally looking at it going, I have faith in you to be delicious. And then I do it about 3 minutes, scoop it out, and yeah, there you go. I don't use any sort of poaching machine. And Mairead Ronan made me poached eggs recently and she used a kind of contraption to do it.
Yeah.
And it made me not give her as much credit.
I agree. No. I think we've got to the bottom of Owen's problems here, Derval. He's talked about the poacher. Once you start involving any equipment other than the saucepan, the water, the vinegar, and the thing, that's it. You don't understand that. Like there's been a small investment of small time, and you get this delicious gooiness at the end of it.
And it's gooey. I put this thing up on Instagram the other day saying, yolk gooey or not, and I assumed everybody would say gooey and they didn't. Threw me as well. I was like, whoa, what is wrong with 30% of people? Thank God 70% went gooey.
Slightly high percentage of psychopaths following you on Instagram.
Yeah,
it turns
sickles
out
follow you.
They're a bit gooey. It's very important.
I agree with you. I think that fried eggs are critically underappreciated, particularly as a hangover food. They're my go-to. We had Paul O'Connell in recently talking about his interest in nutrition and how it evolved over the course of his career and how various people would come to training with ideas and they would all follow those ideas because, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, essentially. And I'm really interested for you, like obviously at the end of your career, you end up being synonymous with high quality, good food. You've written numerous cookbooks about it and you've become an ambassador for good quality food. Were you like that at 15, 16? Did you know that this was an important part of being a world-class sprinter?
No, I was absolutely horrendous with food when I was a teenager, hence why it's such an evolution. So my mum laughs a lot because she's just like, clearly, like you're now a completely different person to the one where she was grating vegetables into my food because I was refusing to eat them as a teenager. When I was a teenager, I would have found eating lots of variety of food really difficult, but I was running all the time and like it wasn't really necessarily a problem then. And because I had such like a good typical Irish mammy who was grating vegetables into my food and completely doting on me, I got away with it. And then I went to college and I moved out of home and nobody was cooking for me, so that transition was really difficult for me. And I ended up getting injured, sick, just having a complete shocker for like 1 or 2 years in college. And then I went to the Athens Olympics and got really sick before that. I got like severe food poisoning, got an appendicitis, and I got injured. And that was the trigger for going, yeah, okay, maybe I need to start looking at everything. And food was the big thing I started to get interested in. So it was from 2004. But what's fascinating now is like back then, it wasn't as big an element of sport and prep that it is now. Like it wasn't the world it is now. So when I started really looking at it, even my coaches at the time were like, it was just almost like something I was gone off on a tangent doing, considering all the food I was eating. And I just started learning. So like I started like, I would contact different people. Sonia Sullivan was one of them, and say, okay, who do you know like that could help me with this? And started talking to different dietitians, different nutritionists. And when I travel, I talk to like the dietitian on, say, the German team, because I always felt like the German team were always on it. Like they're always very detail orientated. And I just talked to everybody and I really enjoyed that. And then I figured that like, yeah, it was about performance, right? Because I wanted to eat well to ultimately run well. But then I actually really started to enjoy cooking. So then what I started to do is I had all these notebooks with like, okay, these are all the ingredients that I've been told are really good for me. But no one was kind of telling me how to cook with them. So they were like, oh, you should eat loads of this. And I was there like, what am I meant to do with them? So I started doing little stints in cookery school. So I first went to cookery school, I think in 2009. And then I went to cookery school, did a certificate in 2012 after the Olympics. So I loved it from like the two perspectives, from the perspective of I needed to perform well, but also from the perspective of I actually really enjoy cooking. I enjoy the process and I really enjoy eating. Like I love food. So yeah, it was interesting, but it's amazing to see so many people into it now because that was so unusual, you know, in the middle of my career.
Would it have made, so if you could go back and tap yourself on the shoulder as a 13, 14 year old, what impact do you think it would have had in terms of performance earlier on in your career?
Do you know what? Probably, I think when you're thinking about teenagers, I think it's really important that they're enjoying it. Of course, the food's essential, but I think as a parent to a teenager, like I'm a parent now to two small kids, and I'm just like, I always want them to be enjoying whatever they're doing. Of course, I'm always considering like what they're eating, but I would not be in any way overly strict. I'm just trying to make sure they're getting some good foods into them. But I don't know. I think the fact that my parents didn't make a massive deal out of it, but they probably snuck healthy food into me in a way that I didn't even realize, I think was a really nice approach, and that I didn't overly worry about it. And I got to a point myself where I was like, this is actually negatively impacting how I perform. And if I can get better at this, maybe it's something else that will help me. But so I don't think 13-year-old that would have landed.
Maybe before Athens then, if you could go back and talk to yourself 18 months out from Athens, what would the impact be?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think it would have made a difference to my experience of Athens. So I think I would have felt like I went there and was more prepared, whereas I left the Athens Olympics feeling like I had turned up almost at an event without equipment. You know, like I felt like I turned up and I was so amateur in Athens, and that was one major component in it. Like I knew how to race, but all the other stuff that goes into it, and there's loads of other things I didn't know how to do. So I don't think result-wise it would have made a massive difference because I wasn't good enough yet by Athens. You know, I was still on that kind of, you know, trajectory of getting better. But I think I would have walked out of it maybe feeling more like I belonged there, whereas I walked out of it very much questioning myself. But then I would argue that experience in Athens transformed who I became because I felt like I was starting at such a low base. And I felt like if I could qualify for an Olympic Games at this ridiculously low base, what could I do if I actually started getting things right or getting things 80 to 90%?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much I change. Like, I'm a big one for learning from situations and going, okay, it's not the outcome I wanted, but what happened that made me learn and made me get a bit better? And did that make me become a different athlete? And I think Athens transformed me as an athlete, and it was really difficult, but it transformed me.
Well, maybe this is a follow-on question from that then. Do you think that your knowledge base specifically when it comes to this very small part of who an athlete is and their identity and their performance. But do you think that has been passed on to the generations that come after you? Because sometimes it feels like in Irish sports, we let people go off, be trailblazers, learn their lessons, and then if we ask them about it, the story gets told. But sometimes we don't ask them about it, and it's like somebody, there's these little silos of information that are sitting within, and I'm not talking just about athletics, because it happens in GAA all the time. A manager comes in, learns loads of stuff, and then disappears and takes with them all the intellectual property. And it happens in rugby, it happens in soccer. I'd say it does happen in individual sports even a bit more as well. So do you feel like we, as an Irish sporting race, have learned from the nutritional information that you and your generation acquired?
A really easy answer to that is no, to be honest. And I don't mean that just on the food context. I mean it more. And I talked to David Gillick about this recently, because I started doing a tiny bit of coaching, like really small. Someone came to me and asked me to help them. So I've been trying to help them. Myself and actually Marion Heffernan, Rob Heffernan's wife, have been together trying to do a bit of coaching. And I rang Dave Gillick because I was saying, you know, I was asking him, had anyone ever directly asked them for his help to coach them, you know? And he was saying no. And I was saying, it's funny because this would be one of the first times someone has asked me, and it's however 8 years since I retired. And I was saying, I feel, and I actually wrote a tweet about it during the Olympics, I feel there's all this knowledge built up during a career. And, you know, I would have looked at my whole system as like a high performance system, an individual high performance system. Nutrition was a massive part of it. Then obviously the training was a massive part of it. There was all these different components. And I could probably sit and present on that all day, because, and I have training diaries everywhere and I have all this information on it. And Sean and Terry, my coaches, were a huge part of it, and different people who were in and out of my team at the time. And when I retired, it was literally like I wrote a column about retiring. I announced it and I turned my phone off for a day, and then I turned it back on and that was it. I was done. I was gone. And there's been very little conversation since about my career or the learnings for it. And I'm not saying, like, I by far didn't have a perfect career, but, you know, at times it was really good and it was at a level that's not easy to get to in world athletics. And I think, like, that knowledge base, and say even Paul Hessian, you know, the 1 in 200 meter record holder, he had an incredible, like, a few of us had really good careers at the same time, and we learned a lot off each other and we helped each other a lot. And Hessian actually lived near me recently, because he's a doctor now and he was doing 6 months in CUH. So I found him somewhere to live near me, and we would talk a lot about, like, different experiences and what we learned from different things and different approaches. And but yet we've never really passed that on. But I don't think there's enough of a structure there to pass it on. So I really feel like when people retire, because even my coaches, like, my coaches don't really coach now. So when I retired, Sean in particular didn't coach again. And I would doubt anyone has had a conversation with him about his learnings from my career. And we all would feel quite passionate about it. Like, and even during the Olympics, you know, myself, Rob and Sonia, we'd be talking about different things and different experiences. And, like, I was loving learning from Sonia, because, as I say, because I'm doing a tiny bit of coaching now, I was going, okay. And, you know, she's coaching, so I was asking her, and Rob is coaching, so Rob was asking. So it was like this little kind of, we love to learn from each other. So I don't know, does that answer your question very well?
Yeah, 100% it does. It's like we just don't have a structure in, you hope that at some point the Sports Institute begins to get enough resources to be able to go back and ask people, you know, what are the things you've learned? Is it possible you could pass some of this on? Like, I remember watching a documentary about the boxers, and they were learning how to cook. It was the Paddy Barnes, Michael Conlon era, and it was one session and the cameras were there. So I'm sure the cameras were there because the session was happening. But at least there was a sense that this is something that them as young men were being trained to do. It's just that the first time they come into the system, it'd be great if there was somebody with, if they were to go back and say, I learned how to cook at 24 and it had a big impact on my ability to win a bronze medal in the Olympic Games. You're now 14. If you manage to crack this right now, you won't have to go through the problems that I went through. And when problems arise, you'll have that base of confidence that, you know, you eventually got. Like, I don't think anybody should ape your career path, but certainly they should learn the lessons that you learned later in your career as early as possible, so that whatever lessons they have to learn, they're doing it from a stronger base.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, it's funny because as simple as that, like cooking is definitely one of them. Like I didn't learn to cook until I was in my 20s, and it was very much like a solo mission where I went off and spent a long time trying to figure it out. And I get asked a lot by parents, what should I feed my kids? And I'm like, okay, well, get a list of ingredients that are really good, and then actually just hand them a cookbook, like whoever is cookbook, and get them to get into the kitchen and learn it as a skill. Like, I do wish I'd gone to college and had it as a skill. I think it would have made a really big difference to me. Now, I did learn at the same time, but yeah, I do think that's interesting. And I think there's like two sides of it. I think there's like the really practical stuff like that. Like, what was your approach to food? What was your approach to nutrition? Like, what was your approach to the day-to-day? Like, simple things like, you know, I was saying, you know, I'm doing a tiny bit of coaching now, and like some of the things I would have done that was very practical and simple throughout my career, I think can at times maybe seem a bit surprising when I'm coaching. You know, it's like, really? And I'm going, and myself and Marion would be like, yeah, like, I don't even know how to give examples of, you know, even something like the other day I was looking at the training plan and I was like adding up all the amount of, because we're sprinters, so it's different in endurance. So I was adding up kind of the amount of steps, like the amount of meters in the session for the week, just in terms of load, because just monitoring injuries. And even that was something that I was like, okay, well, what would your step load, like your meter load have been in other years when you got injured and stuff? And, you know, like monitoring, looking, writing things down. Like, there's so many things that are so practical, but it took me years to learn them. And like, my career was about 14 years long. It's not like I rocked into it at 20 and I was great. I wasn't at all. I was so far from great. I was so raw. I didn't have a clue. I was just, I think probably the best way to describe it was quite spirited and had an excessive, maybe at times deluded belief that I could do something. But, you know, by the time I left 14 years later, I think there was a lot of things I had acquired a lot of knowledge on that were really, really helpful. But yeah, I don't know. It's funny, even a simple one, like when I was starting to do a tiny bit of coaching, I was looking for training plans for sprinters. And like, even something simple as like, imagine having like a centralized database where every athlete we've ever had, like all our national records are pretty incredible on a European and global scale. They'd all do pretty well. That's one of the things I did during the Olympics. I looked at all our national records and how they would have done at the current Olympic Games. They would have done pretty well if you could get all our athletes running them again. So then I'm going, well, you have all these athletes who ran all these times and, you know, field events, you have people who did jumps, throws, whatever. Imagine if all of their coaches and all those athletes had taken their training diaries and uploaded them to a database when they finished. And then the generation now could look into it going, oh, that's interesting. That's a session they used for speed during racing. That session they did, oh, that's interesting. The athlete uploaded something about like, you know, their diet or what they were doing. That's interesting that was their approach or things like that. I was like, imagine if we found a way to capture that data. I don't think that would be that difficult.
No,
but I underestimate a lot of things.
Like, okay, so Facebook are obviously evil, but a Facebook page would be the easiest way to do that. You could actually, obviously, with a tiny bit of money and investment, get some proper system. I don't know if you know that one of the pieces of memorabilia we have here, Cleta Foley gave us this. It's the 100 metres final from 2009 in Berlin. It's the official result sheet that she kept and had framed. And first, it's Brigida Foster-Hylton. It's Lopez Schlepp second. It's Ennis London third. And it's you in fourth. This is from 2009. This is a little bit of the records that we have in our studio here. And it's special to us. But do you have any of that kind of stuff? Is that any part of your life now anymore?
That's a really good one, by the way, you have, because that's my favorite race in my career.
Right.
Is that, yeah, so it's a good one. I have one picture hanging in the house downstairs, and it's one that Sean got for me, my coach, after I won World Indoors. And I think that's probably a pretty good one to have. But there's just one hanging there. Like, I've loads of stuff, and I don't, you know, most of it's in boxes. I don't have much of it around the house. And we actually have more, because obviously, you know, my husband went to the Olympics for sailing. We have more kind of boaty pictures because I think they look prettier because of the ocean. So, but not because he's sailing in them. Oh, hopefully, he's not listening to this. But I'm just like, oh, that's very nice. But yeah, I must actually go through my stuff at some stage, but I'm actually like, I'm not a usually sentimental person. So like, I don't look at stuff like that. And I think about it more in terms of like the fact that you have that, like, I love that because I'm like, that was, in my opinion, the best race of my career, even though it wasn't the quickest race of my career. But I should probably put that somewhere. But actually, I framed that photo finish for Sean and Terry after that race. And I think that's probably the only thing they have of my career as well. But yeah, I don't know. It's a funny one. I think people are different. Like, you walk into some people's houses and there's like singlets and there's stuff everywhere. My house is definitely not like that.
It's interesting.
It's not a really bad thing.
I know. I think it's really interesting. And just to bring this all back, the point about learning how to cook.
Yes.
One of the first things that anybody can actually learn to cook with is eggs. If like, burn the eggs for the first few weeks, but by the end of those few weeks, you're going to be able to feed yourself five times a week really easily. And it's different. It's a different meal every night. Like, it is actually the easiest way to get into cooking.
Oh, like, eggs are, and I swear, I'm not just saying this, I think eggs are the perfect food, because it's like, it's protein in there and there's amino acids, and you have to make sure you check for the quality mark, the Board BA quality mark. We're really fortunate that we live in a country, and I can tell you this from traveling the world, that food quality is really a big deal in Ireland. So I think make sure you check for the quality mark, but very versatile, use them in loads of ways. And yeah, cooking some of those things, just like, start to practice and see how you go. And what's the worst that happens? You burn an egg. It's probably unlikely. Eggs are kind of hard to burn. If anything, you're just going to make your boiled egg hard, and that's still pretty nice. So you'll be fine.
Stick a bit of mayonnaise on it. That's what I would say. Dervil, great to have you with us. And hopefully we've started a conversation about learning from previous generations and the passing on, because it definitely feels like everybody is on the same curve here. If we just learn to help each other, then everybody progresses.
Yeah, and no one has, you know, I think something's interesting, like, I don't have all the answers. I couldn't go and tell an athlete how to do everything, because everyone's on their own path. But I think there's definitely learnings from what I would have done, from Sonia, from Rob, you know, and I think we need to capture more of that and have more of that, like, knowledge sharing, because I think that would only help the current set of athletes. It's nice to know that people were there and did it to a certain extent, and that if you're trying to do it, that there you might pick up a couple of things. And even like, I picked up so much stuff from Sonia, and she did a completely different event to me. So yeah, I think it's an interesting one. So we'll see how that progresses.
Dervil, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Always great to talk to you. Cheers.
Thanks for having me.
It's Dervil O'Rourke there. And as she said, get some eggs. Check the quality mark on them. 9:39 this morning, OTBAM.
At times it's becoming farcical, and you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.